Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are reviewing the new Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt film, The Fall Guy. Not to be confused with Free Guy, starring the other Ryan, Ryan Reynolds, that came out 2 years ago.
So that's a good call out.
This is
a
completely different
that.
Movie, The Fall Guy, not okay. Free Guy. That's funny that they're very similarly named. They both have lead actors named Ryan in them.
Super popular lead actors.
And their posters were kind of similar too. They both used like yellow font. So a little confusing. So, but anyway, that's what we're going to be talking about today here on the show. We do have some news and some recommends that we're going to get to in just a second. But The Fall Guy, this movie that came out in 2024, is actually based off of a TV show from the 80s.
Yes, my parents, I did ask if they watched this. My mom for sure watched The Fall Guy, and I think they both were familiar with $6 Million Man too. Well, I know they were familiar. I just don't know how much they were dedicated to watching the show. But The Fall Guy was originally on from 1981 to 1986, starring Lee Majors and Heather Thomas, and they show up. There's a cameo in the post-credit scene. If anyone's interested in them, they are still alive. Lee Majors was already famous at that time because he had played the $6 Million Man from 1973 to 1978. And he was also married to Farrah Fawcett from 1973 to 1982. She was huge at the time. People were obsessed with her. I don't remember like her timeline for people that she married. I know she was with Ryan O'Neal at some point. This was his second marriage, though. I know that.
Okay.
And they actually separated in 79, but the divorce wasn't finalized till 82. But there was a – he was the one – if you know that Farrah Fawcett, that really popular magazine cover where she's wearing a red swimsuit – Lee Majors picked out that picture. Like I remember they had, there's an interview I read recently where he was talking about like they had all the proofs or whatever for the photos and he picked out that one.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah.
So, well, just, it's sort of original, but not 100% original. Cause
right,
it is,
right.
You know,
same
based
name
on a
though
TV
and everything.
Show. Yeah. Yeah.
And the actor is also the same, the name Colt, like that's the same
character name.
Character name. Yeah.
Got it. So we do have some news real quick, though. First up, as we're recording this, the Met Ball was earlier this week, Met Gala, which is always very fun. Lots of big fashion, of course, all the celebrities out and about for that. You looked up the theme. What was the theme again for this year for the Met Gala?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. The Garden of Time.
Oh, okay.
Which whoever knows, these things are so obscure. And I know that there were a bunch of, it was really exciting because there were different co-chairs this year and Rihanna and Zendaya were part of the co-chair, but Rihanna ended up getting the flu. She wasn't there. Zendaya.
Bummer.
Slayed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Zendaya, one of the best dressed from what I've seen.
Oh my gosh. Yes. She had two looks too, Jared. I think you saw both because we were talking a little before this. Her first one was my absolute favorite of the night. It looked really reminiscent of like the 1920s with the super thin pencil eyebrows and this really dark makeup that kind of makes your eyes like almost like you're sick. It's cool though. And then I loved Elle Fanning looked great as well. I think Elle Fanning has fantastic fashion sense. And then I really like Gigi Hadid's look too. But everybody else, I would just say they go under the heading of bizarre sartorial choices. I don't understand what they're doing. I don't understand how they like, understand the theme, if you will, but it's always fun to watch. But you know what? Last night I was thinking I need to Google what is actually at the Met Ball. Like, what do people do? Because the only thing we ever see is the red carpet. So
yeah.
It's not like the Oscars or anything where you see inside the event. And I don't know how they make the list. And I want to know how many people end up being invited. So it might be something we can follow up on later, but I just, last night I was kind of going down a rabbit hole in my brain. I didn't even Google any of the stuff. I just was thinking of all these questions I have about the Met Ball, but those were my best dress picks.
Nice. And obviously, yeah, it is to raise money for the, you know, the Met, the Museum of Art. But you're right. We don't know what happens once they go inside. Do they eat dinner? Is there somebody give a presentation? is there a PowerPoint slide? You know, what are they doing there in there? You know, who presents? Is it,
I don't know,
Anna Wintour from Vogue? Is it somebody else? You know, so.
And I know that there's been some famous relationships that have started at the Met, including Taylor Swift and Joe Alwyn met at the Met Gala.
Okay.
So that, and there's been like, there's crazy things. Like, I remember there was one night where people were smoking in the bathroom. You're not supposed to do that. And there were people take pictures smoking in the bathroom and put it on their social media and stuff, which is kind of idiotic, but like, I think they think it's fun. Like, they're breaking rules. Anyway, it's a crazy event. Would I ever say no to the invite? No, I would absolutely go. But I don't look like those people, and I don't feel like I would really be comfortable in that atmosphere.
Also, I feel like, I don't know, because I've never seen pictures of the entire setup, but I feel like they have to set up lights or something on that like entryway, because it's always so bright right in that area the pictures. So and I've never been to the Met, but you know, if I get to New York City, I feel like that would probably be on the list of things to do for sure.
Yes. And also MoMA is another super popular museum of modern art. I mean, they have so many mm-hmm. famous art museums there, well, museums in general, but yeah, first Monday in May, the Met Gala. So that happened. Those were my favorites. Kind of forgettable.
Other news is Taylor Swift came out with a new album. It's called The Tortured Poets Department. It's pretty good. It's not my favorite, but I think it's okay. So my big complaint with it is I think she could have scaled back the tracks a little bit. I think instead of releasing 31, just pick the best, you know, 15 or whatever. And,
wow. See, and I really that. Like that there's such a catalog of stuff. So if you don't like some of the songs, I mean, out of 31 songs, you're bound to like some of them. And that another thing I appreciated about this, I never buy her album, pre-order it or anything, because I know she's going to do this. She's going to add to it. So I always wait a little while. And just kind of listen to it on my own or listen to like a friend's copy or whatever. And so when she then at 2 a.m. released all these other ones, I was like, oh my gosh, I think that's actually the final one this time, and bought it. I really like it. I mean, I like this age and stage of Taylor's life and her music a lot more than the earliest stuff. I wasn't into the country and all that stuff. But again, I'm now consider myself a full Swiftie. However, if I can say this, I do think there's a couple songs that sound a lot like other songs on like Folklore and Evermore, to the point where I was like, how can you even get away with calling this a separate song? It's the same melody.
And like Midnights too. Some of that sounds very similar to like what's on Midnights. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all good. I enjoy it. There's, and in fact, I like most of the songs out of the 31, but I did find that suspect where I just was like, well, this isn't really a different song. I mean, these are different lyrics, but it's the same melody. I don't know if anybody else feels that way, and no hate to Taylor Swift. I mean, I still think she's a genius and doing a great job. I am happy for her, but those were my thoughts. But I really do overall love the album. I love the cover of it. I'm into it, and I've been following. I don't go looking for any of the Easter eggs, but I read all about them. So that's been fun.
Yeah. So that was obviously, she announced that back at the Grammys earlier this year and then released it. I did appreciate the fact that the album just came out. We didn't hear anything on the album before it was released. I feel like sometimes nowadays artists release 4 or 5 songs from the album before the album comes out sometimes. And then like by the time the album releases, you're like, well, I've already heard half of this and I'm kind of sick of it because they play on the radio for forever or they just, you know, are on streaming or what or whatever. So I appreciated that. There was kind of that surprise factor of like, what's this going to sound like? Because we hadn't heard anything off of it until it got released. So
I agree with you. I didn't even notice that, but that's a really good point. And I also think that was a good move.
So we have a few more news things. We did have a celebrity death earlier this week. Very acclaimed actor that has been in a couple of big movies and big franchises that you've probably seen. And I know, Katie, you had some more info on this celebrity death from earlier this week. So
Bernard Hill, man, this is an actor that I certainly recognize, but I did not expect the amount of, I guess, sadness and not retweets, but like people talking about his death for days to come. But Bernard Hill, he played, I knew him from Titanic, the movie Titanic, that James Cameron did. He played Captain Edward Smith, who did go down with the ship and chose to go down with the ship, which is what the captain is unfortunately supposed to do. And he also was king. I can't remember if it's Theoden, if that's how they pronounce it, Lord of the Rings. I've seen all the Lord of the Rings, love them. I just can't remember if that's how you pronounce it. But those are like his two big roles. But he'd been an actor for so many years. He was only 79 and he was English, but he was very beloved. People are super distraught about this. So I am terribly sorry that he died, but that's what he was best known for.
Yes. So, do we have any other news items before we move on?
That's it for me.
That's about it. Yeah. Yep. That's all the big stuff. So, okay, on to recommendations now. I have a few things. I read Kristen Hannah's new book, which is everywhere.
You did?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
How was it?
It was good. I really liked it. It's called The Women. So,
yes.
And it is about a nurse during the Vietnam War. So that's what the book is about, follows her character mainly throughout the course of the book. I've read three Kristen Hannah books now, Four mm-hmm. Winds, The Great Alone, and now this. I've enjoyed all three. She does a really good job with her main characters. And then also picking always like a historical setting is, interesting too.
Right.
I have not read The Nightingale, which I know is like her
That's my
most
favorite.
Popular book. But this one was really good. A quick read. And kept me like interested the whole time right from the beginning. So I really enjoyed it.
That's awesome. I have heard glowing reviews about that book. I've already downloaded it to my Kindle. It's definitely, I'm planning on it being a May read for me. So I'll keep you posted. But I'm glad you read it.
Yeah, it was good. So, and then my only other recommendation is I've been watching Baby Reindeer on Netflix. I don't know if you've been watching this at all.
Oh my, okay. Do tell, because there is controversy amok with the show, but I don't really know the premise because I'm deciding if I want to watch it or not. So please convince me.
So I haven't looked at all the controversy yet because I'm not done with the show yet. So I don't want to get like spoilers, basically. I have three episodes left, so I'm more than halfway done though. The premise is that it is about a man named Donnie who is stalked by a woman named Martha. And this is apparently based on a true story from what I've heard. And I know the actual Martha in real life has come out and said some of the things in the show are not indicative of what actually happened. I haven't really researched into all of that yet because I want to finish the show first and see kind of how it ends. But it's very well made. It's well acted. It's got a lot of people in it that I've never heard of before in terms of acting. And Richard Gadd he plays Donnie. And he also created the show, and this was the actual guy that this happened to. So so that's kind of interesting that that's how it came to be. And it was a play, like a stage play that he did at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival like 5 years ago. And now it's a Netflix show. So based on that play and based on his experiences of getting stalked. So.
Well, please let me know what you think of it overall. Text me when you finish it, and that'll help me decide if I should watch it or not. But, you know, I do really like to watch things that people are talking about. So
yes. And first episode was like it draws you in very quickly.
Oh, good.
And all the episodes are pretty short. This last one was the longest one. I think it was 45 minutes, but most are between that 30-40 minute range. So they're not long episodes, which is kind of nice. So
cool.
Yeah, so it's not like a heartwarming story at all, but kind of a little bit of a bone-chilling story of what can happen to somebody that's under stalking and getting constant messages and people showing up at his workplace, unannounced and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, but definitely one to check out. It'll give you something to talk about for sure. Baby Reindeer on Netflix. So.
Well, I have a couple just quick things. Speaking of Netflix, I forgot to mention I watched all of Selling the OC, the newest season 3, I think, over the weekend, and it was unhinged. I like people I didn't think I would dislike, I now loathe. I do think that they had what some would call a fomance, where they have like a fake romance in the show. It at the end, it seemed overly produced, but at the same time, I really like watching it. I love seeing these houses that I would never want to live in. They look like death traps. You'd fall down these marble stairs and just crack your head open and die. There's too much house for a person to live in and truly enjoy. It's expensive. I don't have the body or the, I don't want to live like they live in the OC. So anyway, but it's a fun show to watch and the fashion is amazing. I mean, I really enjoy seeing all of the fashion, even if it's stuff I wouldn't wear and certainly stuff I couldn't afford. But yeah, I would definitely, I know unhinged is kind of an overused word these days and I love using it. I am part of the problem, but that is the best word for me to describe this current season. And then I also, I'm actually going to skip. I won't mention any podcasts or anything because I don't have anything new to report there. I have two books to recommend, both Book of the Month books. One is Listen for the Lie by Amy Tintera. I've never read anything by her, but she has written, if I remember this correctly, wrote all young adult books. And this is her first foray into adults.
Okay.
Adult like books. And it was so good. And it was, of course, it was about a podcast. I've read several like true crime thrillery books where it revolves around a podcast, but this was incredibly well done. It was just one that really kept me interested the whole time. The other book I read that might be a favorite book of the year this year is called Good Material by Dolly Alderton. She's written other books, really popular. I had not heard of her. I really liked the cover of the book. And then my best friend Kylie read the book and said it was good. And then it kept popping up on Bookstagram accounts and stuff where people were talking about it. And everybody kept saying the same thing, that it was such an interesting read because it's about a breakup, but it's from the male's perspective. And normally, why would you want to read? Like, there, you know, we have men's perspectives everywhere and, you know, patriarchal society, all that stuff. But he's so emotional and authentic, and it's very interesting to read it from his perspective. And I didn't expect the ending, so I won't ruin anything. I won't say good, bad, or anything like that. I thought the book was great the entire way through. So again, that was Good Material by Dolly Alderton. And then the last thing, this might sound bizarre, I don't know how I've gone my whole life without watching this, but I recently found Dateline. I know
the OG true crime show.
Yeah, there's currently, it's just insane. And I had to mention it because I am so into true crime and have been my whole life. Mysteries, thrillers, true crime, all of it. Suspense, Hitchcock. I love anything like that. And somehow I had never watched Dateline and it's on Peacock. And I was like, I'm going to give this a go. So I picked the most recent season, which I think is season 33. And I am obsessed with it. It actually is so scary too, that there are nights I've scared myself if I'm the only one awake and I've had to turn it off. And like a lot of true crime doesn't do that to me. Books don't do that to me. This show terrifies me, even if it's stuff that like would never happen to me. Like one man, his wife hired someone to kill him.
Okay.
And the person succeeded, but he was in the military. And I just think, well, I wouldn't do that. My husband's not in the military. Like, it's stuff that wouldn't happen. It doesn't even fit my life. And I'm terrified. Anyway, it was funny that I started watching Dateline though, because my probably or definitely top five Taylor Swift songs on her new album, one of them's called Florida with Florence and the Machine, who I also really enjoy. And that song is so good. And apparently, word on the street is that she wrote it because she watches so much Dateline. And a lot of the people on Dateline escape and go to Florida and just kind of like try to flee the scene and get out of trouble. And so that's why she wrote that song. And I thought that was so funny. And I don't know how much truth there is to that. But I, you know, a lot of fans seem to be right about these things. But I was like, that is so funny that I have just discovered Dateline. And now this song is out that happens to be about people running away on the show Dateline. So if anyone is interested in starting Dateline and you've gone your whole life without it, like I have, you can start it now. It's on Peacock.
All the what, 33 seasons?
33 seasons. And there's new episodes still coming out weekly.
Crazy. So that's like, you know, like Law and Order or CSI or something that's just been on like forever. And obviously, like, the original ones of those, and this is different obviously because it's true stories instead of, like, you know, made up stuff for shows like that. But you know, the fact that it's been on for so long and people still enjoy it and watch it and still popular, you know, definitely says something about the stories that they're finding and all of that. So okay, well, time to talk now about The Fall Guy, released on May 3rd, rated PG-13 for drug content, action and violence, and some strong language. It is 2 hours and 6 minutes long. On IMDb, it's a 7.3 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, critics 83%, audience 87%. So everybody pretty much enjoying this movie. Box office wise, a little bit of a disappointment so far. Domestically, $28 million and worldwide, $65 million. That's a little surprising considering that it's got two really big stars in it, and Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt. And there was nothing else really out this weekend, and it's kind of the start of summer. So I thought it would be somewhere a little bit higher than that, like maybe the $40-50 mm-hmm. million dollar range. My theater that I went to, we went Friday night.
Yeah.
It was not full, like not packed, you know, not every seat was full, but it was probably 75% full in the showing that we went to. So,
well, and it is, I was going to ask you about that actually, because when I was recording the numbers down for the notes, I was like, that seems low for the exact reasons you just said. And I couldn't really figure anything out, except I guess this is the time of prom and graduations and stuff. But like, I even know I had a cousin that went to prom this weekend. So it could just be weird timing where people couldn't go. But I thought that was so weird because it could be also the algorithm and stuff on social media. But all I'm seeing is advertisements for this movie and interviews about this movie and the stars of the movie. And then Ryan Gosling doing all these cute like stunt moves with his stuntmen on the red carpet and stuff like that. So I was shocked by the numbers too. But I don't think it's a reflection of how good the movie is. I just think it's weird timing in the year, and a lot of people are busy with graduations, proms, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's also not like a franchise. You know, it's not 100% original, but it's based on something that was around back in the 80s. So that's like, you know, a whole new generation is now discovering it and hearing about it. So fairly original as far as movies go nowadays. It's not a new Marvel movie or like the 18th Transformers or something like that. So
there was a guy in the theater that in the post credits, I was glad I waited because I almost didn't sit through them. And this guy said, I heard him say to his wife, he goes, oh, there he is, when Lee Majors popped up on the screen. So I think he knew that that was going to happen. And that's another reason I would think it would do well, is I think it appeals to multiple generations, because some people are going to be like my parents and know who Lee Majors is. And some people are going to be like, oh, I love Ryan Gosling.
So the synopsis for this one is a down and out stuntman must find the missing star of his ex-girlfriend's blockbuster film. So the movie is about making a movie. So movie-ception going on in The Fall Guy. Directed by David Leitch, who you've probably heard of or at least seen some of his movies. He's a former stuntman, and he's a director, writer, actor, producer, and stunt coordinator. And he directed Bullet Train, which we have an episode on. He directed Atomic Blonde. He directed John Wick. Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw, which we also have an episode on. And next up, he's going to direct Undying Love and two TV series, Hot Air and Button Man.
And so, if anyone is interested, we did Bullet Train was episode 158. And then I'm looking for Hobbs and Shaw. I can't remember when that came out.
That was really early, I think.
I think you're right.
Scrolling back through the document.
Here we go. Oh, 16.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, but you know what? I remember I liked that movie.
You did. You had high praise for that movie.
I cannot believe the movie we did right before that was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I cannot believe that was only episode 15 of this podcast.
And we have come quite a long way.
We
this
really
is episode
have. Go
209.
Us.
So, yeah.
209. Good job.
So we'll take a quick break here on the show. We'll come back. We'll talk about the cast and our likes and dislikes for The Fall Guy. And we're back here on the show talking about The Fall Guy, starring in the lead role of Colt Seavers, none other than Ryan Gosling.
Jared, please fall asleep on the crush alert button, please. Thank you, sir. Ryan Gosling, we're no stranger to him. I'm pretty sure you know him. He, of course, plays Colt Seavers in this movie. He is a Canadian actor, best known for Blue Valentine, Drive, The Notebook, Lars and the Real Girl, Crazy Stupid Love, and La La Land. And also now Barbie. He's been nominated for 3 acting Oscars for Half Nelson, La La Land, and Barbie. I would like to say right now, on May 7th of 2024, he will win an Oscar one day. So mark my words.
Yes, I do not think it'll be for this movie, though.
No, but he's beloved. Next up, you can see him in Project Hail Mary, which is based on the book by Andy Weir. He also wrote The Martian. I did want to say Jared and I covered Ryan in the Barbie episode, and there were 3 upcoming projects listed. And when I went to look on IMDb yesterday, they only had Project Hail Mary listed, which I thought was interesting.
Okay.
I know one of them was The Wolfman, so I don't know if those are just on hold. I don't know what's going on there, but I thought that's not happened to me before where it's changed like that.
You also forgot to mention the absolutely amazing Ryan yes. Gosling movie, The Gray Man, which is obviously in the same universe as The yes. Fall Guy.
Well, and also something interesting to note about Ryan in particular. Yeah, The Gray Man, we were not
good.
Not overly impressed, but a lot of hot people in that movie. But Ryan used to make, I read there was some quote this week because I've been watching a bunch of interviews, and he was talking about how he used to make all these independent films, like these kind of dark, brooding characters and stuff. And now he does a lot more kind of blockbuster movies and stuff, but it's intentional because he is really proud of the work he's done. But because he has daughters and stuff, he wants to be able to make these movies that are enjoyable and more accessible to people. And not quite so dark, because he said he would also take that home. Like if he was playing a character that was, you know, a psychopath or whatever, that would stick with him when he went home, like, and he doesn't want to be that kind of dad. So I thought that was nice. And it makes sense if you look at his body of work, kind of the trajectory he's had. So that's where he is now. Next up, we have Emily Blunt playing Jody Moreno. Jared, if you could just fall asleep again real quick. Thank you, sir. Love Emily. She is best known for The Devil Wears Prada, Sicario, Mary Poppins, Mary Poppins Returns, A Quiet Place, A Quiet Place Part 2, and Edge of Tomorrow, among many other projects. She has been nominated for 3 BAFTAs, and last year she was finally nominated for a Best Supporting Actress Oscar for Oppenheimer. Next up, you can see her in Live, Die, Repeat, and Repeat, and Jungle Cruise 2.
Very nice.
Thank you. And last up, we will highlight Hannah Waddingham. She plays Gail Meyer. I do love Hannah very much as well. She is an English actress, best known for her role as Rebecca Welton in Ted Lasso, for which she won an Emmy. She also starred in Hocus Pocus 2 and the TV series Sex Education. She is a well-known musical theater actress, particularly in the West End in London. She's a spectacular musical performer. Next up, you can see her in Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2, The Smurfs movie, and Krapopolis. And
very varied movies coming up there for Hannah Waddingham.
I thought the same thing. And we very likely will cover Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 2. We covered Part 1 and both really liked that movie. To round out this cast, there is some excellent supporting roles, including Aaron Taylor Johnson, Stephanie Sue, Teresa Palmer, Winston Duke, and even Jason Momoa.
All in this film, The Fall Guy. So first up for our likes, obviously we talked about the casting already. You've got 2 really big stars in this, Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt, but lots of supporting faces that are really cool to see too, like Stephanie Sue, Winston Duke. I was a little intrigued that Stephanie Sue did this movie because she's coming off of Everything Everywhere All at Once,
right,
which is such a career defining performance for her. And then she's in this for like 10 minutes, maybe 15. I mean, almost would have thought they would have used her more, coming off of because she got an Oscar nomination for that movie. So,
yes, Jared, you touched on one of my dislikes. So I will bring
get to that later.
I agree with you. I don't know that I thought it was weird that she was there. I was more confused by how infrequently she showed up, but I wonder if she took this role because although she was well known and came from such a noteworthy movie and everything, I wonder if this just is more exposure. I mean, it's a film
that's true,
sure, paid well, but also like if you have a movie with Hannah Waddingham, Emily Blunt, Ryan Gosling, people are gonna see it.
You're probably not saying no to that, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Right. So there is some somewhat unrealistic expectations with like how the stars look in this movie. Obviously, Ryan's very attractive. Emily's attractive as well. So some of that can be like hard to watch when you're just like a normal person sitting there. Like there's, a, you know, we talk about hot people in movies. There's a lot of hot people in this movie in particular.
Yes. And I don't want to sound crazy. It is, but I can't pretend like my life hasn't happened to me, you know? And so for someone to be someone who's postpartum, to see women like Emily Blunt who have had two kids, and she looked thin as a rail in this movie. She looked gorgeous. And I think she comes by it honestly. I think she eats well and exercises. But I just think that's, it is hard on, because I even think of a child growing up in this world. It's hard to see those expectations and just think, this is how I'm supposed to look. This is how people look. And I think I noticed it more because there was a lot of mention during the promotion of this film about plastic surgery and like if Ryan Gosling has had filler and if Emily Blunt has had filler and if they've, and people can do whatever they want. But I do think if you get things done, that's fine. But if people don't know about it or either or, it still sets an unrealistic expectation because that's not natural. It's not like how you were born. So it's just hard for me to watch some of these things. And I also just think like, yeah, a production assistant or a DP or whatever her role was on this film doesn't normally look like that all the time. And stuntmen are, I'm sure there's some very hot stuntmen out there, but you know what? They don't usually look like Ryan Gosling. So anyway, it was just something I noticed and I thought I should mention it because there's definitely been a lot of talk lately about plastic surgery and stuff regarding these actors.
So one thing I liked about this movie is kind of the realism aspect that they went for in terms of shooting the movie. And also like this ties into the stunts, which I'll mention in a little bit. But I liked how we actually saw some sequences like Foley. There's a scene near the beginning of the movie where Emily Blunt, the director, there's like 20 people coming up to her. There's explosions going off in the background that aren't supposed to be happening. It seems very stressful and very chaotic. And I just thought that's probably what it's like to direct one of these big budget movies is this, all this stuff happens all at once and you kind of have to just handle it. So I liked that perspective of it. Some of the other stuff, you know, they tried to show some things that were like more realistic looking, and not so like, hey, this is a movie, but like, hey, this is a movie about making a movie. So I kind of enjoyed that filming style for certain aspects of this, where especially for the stunt sequences and some of the action things, they were trying to like make it more, you know, look more like it was actually, you know, a movie that was being filmed instead of so yes. flashy and like just, you know, everything looked great. So
that's a really good call out, Jared, especially because this movie is called The Fall Guy and is about stuntmen. So it's awesome that people who do stunts, because men and women do it. It was impressive to see that David Leitch highlighted how hard that work is, how much they train for it, that they keep other people safe doing the dangerous jobs. And I couldn't help but think about, I saw that documentary I mentioned last year. That was one of my favorite things I saw, about David Holmes, who was Harry Potter, who was Daniel Radcliffe's stunt double and did get injured, permanently paralyzed, because of his stunt work. And I couldn't help but think about that because I think it's great to highlight all the great work these people do, but also that it can alter your life and people can die or be severely injured doing that job. It is risky. I also like the one stunt. I can't stop thinking about the beginning. Ryan Gosling's about to do a stunt and he's falling backwards from a really tall height. And he's kind of like inside an atrium, like a skyscraper kind of a situation, but I won't ruin anything. But when that camera work was so good, I'm not even someone who's extremely afraid of heights, but that was so scary in the theater to be watching on the big screen and see him like slowly fall back and then just drop to the ground. That was terrifying. So good job with the filming overall.
Yeah, that was a really cool sequence. That was kind of like a one take thing, like right at the beginning of the movie. And then you see in the credits, while the credits are playing, that they show you some of how they shot the sequences of the movie, like the stunt sequences.
Yes.
And Ryan did some of those stunts like himself. So, which was impressive. So
yeah, that was actually another like of mine, was the post credit scene. I really like, or scenes. I loved it that they showed, I like that Lee Majors showed up and I forget her last name, Angela Thomas. I'll look her up. But I like that it showed them. And I also liked that they showed like the different stunts, like you just mentioned, Jared. I thought that was really good. And I like that it started right at the beginning, pretty much of the credits, so that you didn't leave, because that's what kept me mm-hmm. sitting in my seat.
Yeah. Some other likes that kind of tie in hand is this movie doesn't take itself too seriously. And along with that, there's lots of other pop culture references in terms of things that happen in other movies.
Yes.
Just other like funny lines that are said. And I didn't feel like every line really hit, but some lines were pretty funny and were delivered pretty well.
Yeah. And also it was Heather Thomas. Sorry. It was Heather Thomas that starred in The Fall Guy with Lee Majors. Okay, so there were a couple that I thought were just, I couldn't stop laughing. So there was like a Dune joke. The whole movie didn't take itself too seriously, which I really liked. I liked that it knew exactly what it was trying to do. But there was a Dune call out. There was like the wailing music that we hear, and Jason Momoa was in it. You'd kind of have to watch this movie to know what I'm talking about, but that was funny. Colt at one point is sitting in the car, and there's like a montage playing of like how he fell in love with Emily Blunt's character and all these memories, and Taylor Swift's All Too Well is playing. I thought that was very timely and hysterical. And then my favorite, he was talking to Aaron Taylor Johnson, plays the guy that Ryan Gosling is like his stunt double for. Writer, and he says something to him about how he's freaking out and how he's gone insane because he's like, your body's living off glucose, you need to eat carbs, like people need carbs. And I just thought that is, it's just so funny looking at Ryan Gosling's body too, and you're like, how many carbs do you really eat, bro? But I did think that that was funny, and that one made me laugh out loud, and a couple other people in the audience too.
Yeah, there were some definitely funny lines in this movie for sure. So we already kind of talked about the post credits and the cameos and the stunt footage. Of course, I liked the stunts of the movie. We've got to talk about those a little bit. And there's obviously, if you're going to make a movie about stunts and stunt people, you kind of got to have like a variety of things for your stunts. So there's, you know, a car chase sequence, and there's a car rolling, and there's a boat sequence, and there's like hand-to-hand combat, and there's that scene you mentioned at the beginning with the big drop, and all that stuff. So I think the variety that's in here is really intriguing and kind of interesting. There's a nice mixture of a lot of different types of stunts, mm-hmm. which I think just kind of showcases again the stunt community really well, in terms of like, hey, you have these guys that do these crazy car stunts and drive and flip these vehicles, or you have these guys that do these, you know, hand-to-hand combat type stuff. And so all of that was really fun to watch. And I think that's the best part of this movie, are the stunt sequences, especially that last 30 minutes I thought was really well done in terms of them kind of filming that. I won't give away what happens, obviously, because that would be a spoiler and kind of how they get to that point. But there's a big stunt sequence at the end of the movie. But I thought that the stunts, you know, were really well done in this movie, which makes sense when you're making a movie about that type of thing. But also it could have been, you know, the case where the stunts weren't very good or weren't done with a lot of respect to the people in that community. But obviously that's not the case here, especially being directed by somebody that's a former stuntman themselves.
Yes, it was very clear that he has an expertise in this area. And I think I was surprised even looking at all the work that David Leitch has done with filming, acting, producing. He kind of has done everything. It's really impressive. And when you look at the other movies he's directed, he really has made quite a name for himself directing some pretty major films. My only other like really is this movie did remind me of Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, where what I mean by that is that was a movie I saw that really gave me exactly what I was like coming for. It knew, I feel like they had a very clear vision of what they wanted this movie to be. Again, I mentioned it didn't take itself too seriously. It made fun of the Hollywood community for sure. The stunts were incredible. The actors were great. Everyone's beautiful. Things were funny. It's like the epitome of a spring summer blockbuster, and you get what you pay for and you get what you expect to get out of this film.
I would agree with you there. I think it really hit a lot of its marks really well, especially in a time too when less people are going to the movie theaters and movies are expensive. I mean, this is one that's worth seeing on the big screen, and they reward you for coming to the theater to see that with the stunts and with some big name stars. And you know, there's lots of movies that I watch that I think I don't really need to go see this in theaters. Like right. I watched Anyone But You last week with Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell. And that was fine. But I also thought to myself, this was fine on Netflix. Like it just doesn't, you know, I didn't need to go pay $8 to go see this at the movie theater. So, but this movie is the type of movie that obviously like demands to be seen on a big screen. So yes. A few dislikes before we wrap things up here. It was almost a little bit too long. And I think the storylines, so I guess we'll get into a little spoiler territory now, just if you haven't seen The Fall Guy, come back and listen to the rest of this. We don't have that much left, though. But so there's kind of two main storylines that are going throughout the course of the movie. There's the Emily Blunt, Ryan Gosling, like rekindling the romance. Will they get back together? And then there's Aaron Taylor Johnson's character who has gone missing, and Ryan Gosling has to go and try and find him. You find out that he's actually murdered another person, another one of his stunt people, and Ryan Gosling finds that out. And so there's like this whole crime aspect going on with it. But I felt like maybe we didn't need all that part of the story. That was kind of the less interesting part of the story to me. You know, it sets up obviously the final sequence, but the part that I was more intrigued in was the Emily Blunt, Ryan Gosling storyline of like, will they get back together possibly?
I agree with you. You brought up something else that I kind of didn't even think about. I had more questions about the romantic relationship that I felt just kind of never got answered. Like it kind of seemed like they were introduced. We see them at the beginning of the film, and then it doesn't really explain like how they fell in love or anything. I got more from the montage, like when he's listening to All Too Well in the car, I understood more about like their relationship and you kind of get an idea of how much time they spent together. But there was like, Ryan Gosling, like we said, he gets injured. There's no explanation as to like why he just stopped talking to her. That was weird. I don't know. I think he maybe didn't want to rely on her, but I just thought it was very, I thought there was kind of a lot of like loose ends and no explanation there. And I also am with you, Jared. I was more interested in the romantic relationship. And I think the way the film was marketed, I didn't even think there'd be like a thriller murder aspect to the movie. Which kept it interesting, but and I felt like that storyline moved and it was fine, but I'm with you. And then another thing that I had just kind of goes along with this, just because we're talking about murder and bad guys and stuff. I think Aaron Taylor Johnson is starting to get very typecast. And I wanted to call this out because I think that happens to a lot of people, and I don't think he's necessarily bad as a villain or anything. But he kind of always plays this like douchey villain character. I also thought he was kind of doing a caricature of Matthew McConaughey, which
a little bit, yeah,
which is funny. But I felt like he was trying to like impersonate him directly, where I thought, well, this isn't even an acting choice, really. Like you're just imitating someone. But I thought I wanted to call that out because he seems to be, at least from what I've heard, the front runner for the next James Bond, which I am not happy about and would not agree with at all. But if he is the next James Bond, it's very weird for him to go from these roles like Bullet Train and this, where he's playing a very similar character, to then go to James Bond. So I don't know if you felt that way, but I couldn't unsee it. Like I just kept thinking like this guy keeps playing the same character over and over. And he's not bad at it, but I'm tired of it.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you because he's in The Kingsman, he's in Tenet, you know, he's in these types of like action movies for sure. Mm-hmm. And I don't know really how well he fits in James Bond. And obviously he's going to be in Kraven the Hunter, which I think is I don't know if that's a DC or a Marvel movie that comes out later this year. So it's kind of like another similar type of role for him in that movie. So it is intriguing that he's kind of doing the same thing in all of these movies when he wants to maybe be James Bond. And I feel like you said, you need a little bit more range to be James Bond if you're going to play that character. So, and that's also going to be like a 15, 20 year commitment of your career if you decide to do that too. So, yeah.
And I did want to say, I didn't want to gloss over what you said. I think this movie flirted with being too long. There were a couple things I disliked about that. I was entertained. I wasn't yawning. I wasn't like checking my watch or anything. So I wouldn't say it was too long, but it did that thing that I don't always love, where it gives a false ending, where I thought it was going to end three different times. And I'm with you. Like, the stunt sequence at the end was incredible. So that's not what I would cut. I just think there was some stuff at the end when they were trying to wrap up storylines that they could have edited differently or cut out of the film entirely. So I do think it flirted with being too long.
One sequence that I did not like the way it was edited was the one where Ryan Gosling and the other guy are in that garbage truck thing, and Emily Blunt is at karaoke at the same time. Yes. I felt like the way that was cut, we kept pulling. There's very exciting action sequence. Now back to Emily Blunt at karaoke, and we're like, we get it. She's still there. Like, you're trying to do something funny here. It's not working. Stick with that action sequence. You've built up our excitement, and then it's like kept going up and down, up and down, up and down. In terms of that sequence. So I didn't love that one. And then that one too, where he's like slamming into the rock and they're kind of using the megaphones to like talk about their experience of their past relationship.
And getting lit on fire. He's lit on fire. Yeah.
Yep. That was just not a great way to do that like backstory either.
Jared, spot on. No notes. Very, very good job. I totally agree. I got really kind of bored with the lit on fire hitting the rock scene. And then I also, the Emily Blunt thing, I didn't like that scene either, because I feel like everyone knows, because she played Mary Poppins. Also, like, I knew this about Emily Blunt since the beginning of her career in America, at least. She's a great singer. We all know this. She's been in Into the Woods. Like, we get it. We've heard it. I don't know that we need another film to highlight that. We already know. It's like beating a dead horse. We get it. She's beautiful and talented. She's married to a really funny guy. We get it. It doesn't have to happen in every film. And I don't think that added to the story at all. We could have seen that action sequence without seeing Emily Blunt at all. And then he could have shown up at karaoke and he missed her.
So yeah, like we could
agree with you more.
Yeah, we could have seen her at karaoke, and then we could have gone to the action sequence, and then when that's all done, we could have been like, she could, you know, then we have that scene where it's like she left, and it's like, okay, that makes sense. So, another dislike I had, kind of related to that, is that I feel like if you have a movie with Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling, why are you splitting them up so much? Why are they in like doing their own separate things, kind of throughout the middle chunk of the movie, the middle, you know, hour or whatever? I just thought there should have been more scenes with them together. That was, I thought, some of the best parts of the movie, like the end sequence. There was some other parts, like at the beginning of the movie when he's getting ready to do like the car roll. Like, I thought that was good, like the two of them together. But there was a lot of this movie where like he's in one place, she's in another, and they're not together at all. And I just thought that was kind of a weird choice to get two really big stars and then like not have them act in scenes together except for a little bit of the movie.
I admit I didn't notice that like you did, but now that you say it, that's a great point. But I did notice that Ryan Gosling was like I don't think they billed him separately, but he was like the first person mentioned, and like during the credits and stuff, like he's the one they're highlighting in the animation and stuff of like the Fall Guy. So I did feel like, at least from the beginning of the film, it made it seem like he was top billed. He was the most important character. But I felt like the marketing and all the interviews made it seem like they were equal. So I'm with you on that, Jared. And I think the only other dislike I had, speaking of casting, was to revisit Stephanie Sue. She was so good in Everything Everywhere All at Once. She wasn't like, I remember I wasn't thrilled with that Oscar nom in particular, because I can't remember who it was, but I thought somebody else deserved that spot that year. Or I would have at least added that other person in addition to Stephanie Sue, but it doesn't matter. It's already happened. And I can't remember the details, but I thought that she was great in Everything Everywhere All at Once and showed a lot of promise. And I was really excited to see that she was in this film. And we got her for like maybe 10 minutes, like you mentioned. She had such a kind of a small role, and I don't think it showed her range very much. And she kind of just disappeared. Like, we had the kind of like short interaction with her, and then she was gone. So I thought that was a weird choice. And again, I can see why she did the movie, but I don't think that was the best use of her as an actor.
I would agree. Yeah. Yep. So overall, pretty solid, but it's a few negatives there. So
yeah.
I'll go ahead and give my score now. I'm going to give this one a 78 out of 100 for The Fall Guy. Solid.
Very fair. Yes.
Great summer blockbuster. You know, it does, like you said, kind of does everything that you want, but could have been a little bit shorter. Some of the scenes could have just been a little bit better. And the storyline, I feel like that was the biggest issue, was kind of the writing and the storylines with this movie.
Yes, I agree. I actually am very close to you. I went with an 81.
Okay.
For this film, I thought, you know, it gives you what you want. It's pretty people, talented people. I had a lot of good belly laughs watching it. But overall, there were just a couple ways it fell short. But I do think it's a great date movie. I went by myself, but it would be a great date movie. And it's also uplifting. It's not a movie that's going to upset you, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we need that. So I think this definitely has a place. And it was worth, totally agree with Jared. I actually was glad I paid to see this in the theater.
So we had, you know, a lot of fun checking out The Fall Guy, and definitely check that one out in theaters if you would like to go see it. So, and you can follow us on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram, and also on YouTube. We've got our podcast up there as well. And you can search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook to find our page there, and follow us on Letterboxd too. We've got our profiles in the description of the show notes, wherever you listen to your podcasts at. And next time, we don't really know yet, still to be determined, but there's lots of big summer movies coming out, so we'll probably try to hit a couple of those. I know we're getting into that time of year where there's actually like big releases coming out like just about every week now, so we'll see what happens. But we might do Mad Max, we might do Inside Out 2, we might do Challengers. We've talked about a couple different things, so just stay tuned.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.